Cheerscast is a part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, where everybody thinks they know your name.
Say, Carl, I'm babysitting tonight. You got any advice for me?
Sure. There's everything you need to know about babies. Remember, you're the boss.
Yeah.
Don't let them give you any lip. And if they start to act crabby, stick a bottle in their mouth.
Great. Okay, great.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. Here's everything you need to know about customers. Remember, you're the boss. Don't let them give you any lip. And if they start to act crabby, just stick a bottle in their mouth.
You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me today is a brand new guest, the best-selling author of the Jane Austen Society. Please welcome Natalie Jenner. How are you?
Oh, hi, Ryan. I'm so happy to be here. I think I've been waiting for this for almost a year since I reached out to you. So thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming. I'm sorry it took that long, but I'm that far behind in some of my correspondence.
No, I think I had only just hit season two through your podcast when I reached out to you. So I've caught up. So it's all good.
Well, then I do have to ask the obligatory question of what is your cheer story? How, when did you discover the show and its connection to the podcast?
I can make it long because it's a lifelong story, but I won't. I am a lifer. I was starting high school when Cheers premiered, and I discovered it a little late in the season, in the new year, but I watched every episode every week until it finished. And I actually started high school when it started. I started university the month that Rebecca joined, and I graduated law school the month that the show ended. So
wow.
I definitely had this really fun arc. And I was, you know, really watching, I think, Magnum P.I. and Remington Steele on Thursday nights.
Yeah, yeah.
I was being rocketed into adolescence, and my mother and my dad were out, and she taped Cheers. And she said, can you just make sure something about the tape, change it, whatever. This is in the old days where you had to actually, you know, take the cassette out and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
And I happened to catch what was, I think, one of the best times for me with Cheers, which is the last third of the first season with the Miss Boston Barmaid competition, mm-hmm. and all these wonderful, you know, shows.
Andy.
And I think it was the Andy episode. And I think I'll never forget was when Diane comes back in after going to dinner and her hair is sticking out. And it was such a wonderful sight gag. I also thought, and I'm not alone in this, at the time that Ted Danson was the most handsome man on television. And it's ironic because I'm also a fan of New Girl. And there's actually a joke in New Girl where the bartender says, this is the most handsome man that ever lived, and shows a poster of Sam Malone. Mindy Kaling as well in the Mindy Project, because I'm a huge sitcom watcher, also had an homage to Diane. She dressed up as Diane 1 year for Halloween. So I think there's a generation of women that are in their 50s that kind of caught Cheers at that time and really were into, I think, for me, the wordplay, the humor really resonated with me. I'm a writer. I studied English literature in undergrad. Mm-hmm. I was a precocious early reader. So jokes about John Donne, like this was very new for me in television. And I really fell for it. And I watched it religiously. And it became, I think, the one show in my life that has stayed with me. So those VHS tapes of the first 5 years still exist. Wow. I don't dare put them in a player because I'm worried that they will actually break, because it does happen.
Sure, yeah.
But I have the first 5 seasons on DVD. So the joy for me was later in life was rewatching the second half, because I had not kept those on tape religiously.
No.
And in fact, I showed my daughter Cheers when she was too young. I think she was in grade 3 or 4. We watched it every day after school for a year. And I remember my husband received a devastating medical diagnosis about 10 years ago that we continue to live with, that at the time was even more harrowing, messaged to us in an even more harrowing way. And he was literally given 2 to 3 years to live. And it was this incredibly awful time. He has a rare lung disease. And the pandemic definitely also has really had, you know, changed what we want to watch, especially what I want to watch. And what I want to watch is those comfort shows. So about 10 years ago, the final chapter of my lifelong love for Cheers is that I was dealing with my husband's mortality. And I was only able to watch certain shows. I was able to watch Cheers, Frasier, Downton Abbey, and a British home real estate show called Escape to the Country. Almost like a Property Brothers type, you know, type of thing.
Yep, yeah.
And I was only able to read Jane Austen. So I just reread Jane Austen. And so although I am a very weird Venn diagram with a lot of the podcasts on Fire and Water, I'm almost embarrassed to admit this. I've never seen a second of Star Trek. I haven't watched a Star Wars movie since Empire Strikes Back in 1981. I have very little overlap. But in the middle of all of this is this love of the American sitcom. Although I love Schitt's Creek and Fawlty Towers, and I can come up with other sitcoms. For me, I was a child of the 70s, and I love Taxi and Odd Couple, Mary Tyler Moore, MASH, WKRP. Like, that's what I grew up with. And I think that those are comfort shows for a certain generation. And especially if they're set somewhere nice. And Cheers Bar is so gleaming and brass and well lit, and it's so stunning. But I also really love Frasier almost as much. And I love Frasier's apartment. So when I'm in a bad place in life or a worrying place, I always want to go to these comfort centers and be around these characters that I love so much. So that is my story of my love for Cheers and why I keep coming back to it. I think the other thing I would share is that I racked my brain, Ryan, to find any connection to Jane Austen at all, because I have this other life as a writer who has a lot of my work has centered on Jane Austen. So I came up with three things. First of all, she's never mentioned, obviously, but Emma Thompson, who plays Frasier's first wife, Nanny G, won the Academy Award for writing the screenplay for Sense and Sensibility, which is based on one of Jane Austen's novels.
Right.
Barbara Feldon, who plays Sam's once-a-year date, Agent 99 from Get Smart, that meets every winter on Valentine's Day. I've been told is a big Janeite, loves Jane Austen. And the third one puts me 2 degrees of separation from Cheers, which is that I did an event last fall to celebrate Jane Austen's 250th anniversary of her birth in 1775. One of the women that I did the event with for about 100 people in a banquet room was an actress and writer, Marilyn Lightstone. She's Canadian, and she plays the woman that comes in Dance, Diane Dance, who works for Madame Leekova. And gives them the report, and I think the cassette, maybe even, that has Diane's on it.
With Diane
So she's a Canadian actress and writer, and she's actually narrated Jane Austen's most famous novel, Pride and Prejudice, on YouTube, you know, chapter by chapter. Mm-hmm. And so we have a mutual friend in common and did this event together. So that, I think, puts me 2 degrees of separation from the cast of Cheers.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. They never mention Pride and Prejudice in the show. Like, I know she mentioned, she compares herself to, what is she? She mentions Wuthering
Heights. Heathcliff and Kathy walking
Yeah, all of that is amazing. I'd love to unpack a few things, like the fact that your life benchmarks lined up with the Cheers milestones. It's like, that's pretty incredible. And then Rob Kelly and I, and Stella too, are aware that within our greater community, which is largely based on superhero comics and other pop culture stuff like that, Cheers and MASH and Rob's old Bob Dylan podcast, and Stella has her Required Reading podcast, we know that these are a step removed, and not all of our listeners follow us into those adventures, but we also have outside voices who never listen, who don't care about Batman and Aquaman, who do want to talk about the sitcoms. And so that's really cool whenever we get some of the outsiders in there. So happy to have that. And great story. That was really incredible.
And also one more thing to say is that I think in almost every one of my four novels, I have written about people who are in a state of fandom. They are either trying to pay homage to a famous writer, these are historical books, or a famous director, a movie star, etc. They are people that are on the trail often of a literary treasure hunt involving something that someone that they love has touched or written. And that is an emotion that I relate to and that I think I have very in common with a lot of the people that I listen to on Fire and Water, which is appreciating what art and culture brings to our daily life, appreciating what it can do for our spirit, appreciating the work that goes into it. And one of the great values, I think, of these podcasts is that it does, as a writer, it forces me to take a step back and analyze why I love this show, this episode. Something I've never done. I've never talked to anyone in my life about my love for Cheers. It's not something that I chat with people about. People know I have it and people watch it with me. If I'm in a sad mood, my husband's like, do you want to watch Raymond? Do you want to watch The Office? Like, what do you want? We want to watch Cheers. And my family will do it for me. Like, it's very cute. But what I love about your podcast is listening to people who know what they're talking about, analyze why things work and what is the work that is going into these jokes, the work that is going into the setup. It's, from a creative perspective, incredibly energizing. Oh, I have one more crazy coincidence of Cheers before we start, which is that during the pandemic, I caved and we got a bigger TV for the bedroom. And normally as a family, we're watching Cheers from a distance. And up until historically, I would be watching on small TVs. When we got the bigger TV, you're not even going to believe this, Ryan, but in the office, starting around season 3, closest to the door on the middle shelf is a sign for a beer. And it's called Jenner's Golden Ale. And Jenner is my last name. So my name was literally on a sign in the office of Cheers for most of the series.
Wow.
Yeah. Jenner's Golden Ale apparently is a New England sort of Boston brew. I think it must be historic. I'd never heard of it. I could never see the sign. And when I saw the sign, that is such a cool coincidence.
I don't think I've ever noticed it either. That's crazy. Yeah. I'll have to make a conscious effort to look for that next time. Yeah. All right. Well, folks, we are up to the penultimate episode of season 9. This episode is called Home Malone. And I have to say that separately, or it sounds like Home Alone. And the title is obviously a reference to that movie, which came out like 1 year earlier than this episode. The episode written by Dan O'Shannon and Tom Anderson, directed by Andy Ackerman. And the original air date was Thursday, April 25th, 1991. The Cranes need a babysitter and, with no other viable options, ask Sam to sit for little Frederick. Everything is going great until Freddy locks himself in the bathroom. A desperate Sam tries to get inside by climbing out on the window ledge, but ends up getting himself locked out there. Freddy comes out of the bathroom, but Sam falls off the ledge, landing, more or less safely, on the recycling bins below. He gets back to Freddy just as the boy locks himself in the bathroom again. Sam goes back onto the ledge, this time wedging a toy under the window so he won't get locked out. That is, until Freddy takes the toy away, trapping Sam outside again. Frasier and Lilith return later that night to find their son sleeping peacefully and the babysitter hanging from a tree branch outside. Meanwhile, Woody's girlfriend Kelly needs work experience and gets a job at Cheers. Her wholesome naivete is a financial boon to both Carla and Norm, but threatens Woody's career and his safety. All right, Natalie, big picture, what did you think about this one?
Well, I looked it up to see how popular it was in the season, and I think it might have been the least watched. I think it came in at 27 million viewers, and I was surprised by that because I did not think it was the weakest of the season. It's also the second last episode of the year. So I'm not quite sure what happened there. For me, this is a wonderful ensemble show. Like there's a lot of sub stories going on in this and they involve my favorite characters. I mean, if you threw in Robin Colcord and Nick and Loretta, this would be like my favorite episode because I love Woody and Kelly and Henri individually and as a bizarre triangle. And I love Frasier and Lilith. So, and I love anything Sam with children. For some reason, I think because I'm a huge lifelong fan of Ted Danson, and I just think that his warmth, the thing that makes Sam such a wonderful character, the way he just wants the best for everybody, the way he brings out, you know, the best in people through his support and just a warm-hearted character that when you see him with children, I can say as a mom, I have a grown daughter now who's in her 20s, but as a mom, I find those moments, you know, very sweet. This is going to kick off, as you know, the next sort of last major arc, I think that involves Rebecca, which is the thing about, which, you know, and I think this show is, this is the point at which I can see that they're wondering what to do with Rebecca. And so I think this is where, you know, Christy Alley is carrying this on the sheer force of her notable charisma. I mean, she's just such a powerful force on screen. And one of the things that these later episodes give me when I rewatch them to this extent is an appreciation of the intuitive energy that she is displaying, which is a very different type of comedic chops than Shelley Long, who I think was a genius. But it's almost like watching, you know, Meryl Streep versus, I don't know, like a more intuitive performer like a Gwyneth Paltrow or Nicole Kidman. Sure. You can see the intelligence of Shelley's choices and that she's thought things through and that there's an incredible comedic gift there that's come from improv and Second City and everything else. And with Christy, when she's knocking off all the glasses in this particular episode, et cetera, it is a physical, intuitive, passionate energy that's coming out of her that is just, I think, equally of regard and value that I love. But I thought this was not like a great episode for her character. But I thought everybody else, like Norm, everyone else. So for me, this is one of those wonderful ensemble shows. And that's the value that I took from it.
I'm surprised that it wasn't one of the being so close.
I hope I'm not reading Wikipedia wrong. I looked it up on Wikipedia somewhat.
Yeah. I'm surprised just because I do remember watching this at the time and maybe there were some other, like it wasn't preempted or anything like that, because like there wasn't like war coverage or anything going on that would have disrupted it. So I'm not sure if there was something else going on, maybe a major sporting event or something going on that was April. I don't know.
Early.
But yeah, we'll get into it. But I really like the comparison that you were drawing between Diane and Rebecca. And we've talked about it tons of times on the show. But I haven't really thought about it that way. But you're right, like not just in the characters, but in the, I guess what you would call the comedic energy, the way that you described it was Diane is much more cerebral.
Yes.
Much more of the mind. And Rebecca's is much more blunt, emotional maybe, but like also like, I think the way you described her is just a force.
Yeah.
It's just like something about that is just going to get through. Yeah, that's really, really cool. I like that distinction. Our teaser for this episode is a joke that for some reason struck a chord with my family. And we would always reference this when I was growing up. This would always just be a thing, an excuse that we would use. We get the main plot right from the teaser because Frasier calls Woody. He's talking to Woody at the bar. And he's like, look, our babysitter just canceled. Would you mind sitting with Frederick tonight? And Woody's like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. You know, I love hanging out with kids. I used to babysit all the time, you know, before the incident. And it's great because as he's saying that, Frasier's already dialing the phone, like he's going to call up Lilith, and Woody just says, before the incident, and Frasier just hangs up, just hits the button.
My home run is in the teaser. My second place home run. I fought over it, but it's in the teaser. And I mean, I think it's such a great showcase for those two actors. The Frasier-Woody dynamic, the gulf, the chasm between them, you know, intellectually, academically, and in other things is so vast. And it's like they're, you know, on two different planets, you know, trying to create a bridge. And it's so fun to see Frasier being the one that knows, okay, we need to create a bridge. And Woody has no idea. But also what I love about this teaser is the arc, the rhythm of the, oh, there is an incident. Oh, right. No, wait. Okay, right. No, we laughed because there wasn't an incident. Oh, no, wait, we're laughing because there really was an incident in the end. Right. And that's the kind of wordplay and Cheers that I, as a writer, I really respond to is using repetition and language and structure within a scene like that to create the humor. It's part of what I think gives Cheers, you know, such strength, lasting strength from a comedic level.
Right, because Frasier's like, you know, I think Lilith's mom owes us a favor. I'll ask her. And as soon as Frasier's out the door, Rebecca is calling to Woody. She's like, I'm going out of town this weekend. Will you feed my cat? And Woody's like, all right, sure, I guess. She's like, well, don't you love animals? He's like, oh, yeah, I used to have a ton of pets in Hanover before the incident. And it's just like the same gag. It's just like, you know what? I'll ask my neighbor. It's fine. And then Paul is sitting at the bar. He's kind of on the audience's wavelength. He's like, that's brilliant. You just got to like let the ambiguity do the work for you, plant the seed in their mind that something awful is happening. I can't rely on this guy for this particular favor. He's like, you can get out of anything with that excuse. And Woody's like, yeah, just wish I had thought of that before the incident. After the opening credits, we come back to the bar. Frasier and Lilith are now there together trying to get Rebecca to see if she can babysit. And Rebecca is like up on a step stool hanging some of like the wine glasses from the rafter above that we rarely see. But she's like reaching up for there trying to get this thing down or trying to hang up glasses there. And she's like, you know, I get nervous around kids. I don't want to hold them. I'm always afraid I'm going to break them. And like, Rebecca, come on. It's the easiest thing in the world. You're not going to break the child. And you just glass shatters. She's like smashing the glasses above her.
Very effectively. I always know it's props and there's sound and other things going on, but it was effective. It looked real.
And then they're like, okay, you know, obviously got to ask somebody else. Kelly comes in carrying some books and Woody asks her how her class is going. Kelly, in her adorable way, is just like, I would rather not talk about it. And then very apologetically, I'm sorry, Woody, I didn't mean to jump down your throat like that. So she says that she's taking the sociology class, and for her final exam or part of her final grade, she needs to present like a paper on her previous work experience. She's like, but I've never had a job. Carla is a few feet away, kind of overhearing this. And she's like, wait, so your problem is you're stinking rich and you've never had to work before. And my problem used to be I couldn't afford shoes.
Carla is not one of my favorite characters, to be absolutely honest. But this episode really is going to give both Carla and Norm a chance to be equally subversive and equally manipulative. And you can just see like the wheels probably started turning then. But I don't know if you noticed, Ryan, Kelly being a wealthy girl attending college in what, 1991, brings in a stack of books that look like they're 100 years old. Like she's bought it like the used bookstore on college. And I love this performance. I think how Jackie Swanson never ever loses for a millisecond this particular energy of innocence and reactiveness in the moment, even the slightest movement towards not being completely 100% positive throws her off. You know, she's just, you know, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have been like her and Woody are these babes in the woods. And it's such a wonderful dynamic and energy to watch and be around. Cause it's obviously something that makes me as a viewer is to feel good, is to even think that characters like this could exist in someone's mind, let alone in real, like not in real life, but even on the page.
Right. And I mean, we've seen so much of the humor is about like Woody kind of being out of depth in the city, you know, coming from this farm. And now he's found his soulmate basically in Kelly. And she's talking about how she's struggling in school. And she's like, do you have any idea what it's like sitting in class feeling like you don't contribute anything and you don't belong? And Woody's like, well, it's been a while, but that sounds familiar. Norm shouts over to Kelly to come over by his side, and he has the newspaper out and he shows her the want ads. He's like, you can look for a job there. If that doesn't work, you can call an unemployment agency. He's like, there are plenty of places to get jobs. If you can't find a job, you're just not trying hard enough. And Cliff points out, he's like, for somebody who's been unemployed for years, Norm, you know a lot about getting jobs. He's like, I know a lot about water too, Cliff. You don't see me drinking it.
That was another contender for home run for me. For me, Norm is one of my favorite characters, and George Wendt's energy field in this episode, in that moment, he's like, Kelly, come on, here's what you do. It's so solutions oriented. There's so much initiative. It's so much get up and go. It's so much the opposite that I almost felt like I'm watching George Wendt in that moment. Yeah. Like, I thought, this is not Norm talking. Like, even his tone of voice, his demeanor, everything about him in that those few lines is incredibly different than the way Norm is almost always portrayed by George Wendt in a way that is, again, one of the reasons he's one of my favorite characters is he's just so pleasant to watch and be around. So I just thought that was, that moment really stood out for me in terms of Wendt's performance.
Yeah. Woody asks Rebecca if Kelly can get a job working at Cheers. And he's like, you don't have to pay her. It's no big deal. Like, it's just basically just for the experience for her so she can write a paper about it. And Rebecca's like, I don't think that's going to work. And Woody's like, okay, fine. It's no big deal. Then Kelly, reading the paper, is like, look, Woody, it says I can be an escort for $4,000 a night or something. And Woody's like, all right, Miss Howe, now it's a big deal. And Rebecca's like, look, this place isn't a training ground. You know, you actually have to work. You have to be serious. You have to know what you're doing. She like, it demands a certain amount of competence. And as she's describing this, she's sweeping up the floor with the broom. And then she quickly turns around. You can see it coming. But with the end of the broom, just knocks over more glasses. And then just, you hear them shatter under the bar. And she's like, okay, she can work here, but tell her to wear shoes. And then Kelly is like really excited, kind of like, you know, bubbly, hey, happy, like, oh, I'm so excited to work here. And Rebecca walks out and presents her with an apron that the waitress wears. And she's like, you know what to do with this. What does Kelly do with it, Natalie?
Wow, I sure do. You guys eat lobster every day for lunch? And she ties the apron around her neck like a lobster bib. And this is my favorite moment of the show. It is so funny. In fact, I think Harrelson might break here a little bit, because as she's starting to turn it around, his character gives Rebecca the most charming, disarming, apologetic on behalf of my adorable girlfriend. And he right. smiles to Rebecca in such a way that it looks so genuine to me, as if he himself was in the moment, just like really enjoying that. And again, another example of why I love the humor on Cheers is the depth to the jokes, the layers, so that she would think they were given lunch, right? These are people being paid $7 an hour, that she would think it would be every day, that she would think it could ever be lobster, and that she could think it could be lobster every day. Like, there's four levels of joke there going on. It's so funny.
And obviously just doesn't recognize an apron, like has no idea what that is. Just like the closest association. Yeah. It's a bit.
Exactly.
Okay, we're eating lobster.
Yeah.
It's an amazing moment. So,
I
wouldn't be surprised if Woody Harrelson actually was breaking a bit when he gave that reaction, because he said, trying to disarm Rebecca with that. It's good. So, back over by the bar, Sam is on the phone. A girl on the other end is breaking a date with him. And he's like, are you sure you can't put that off till tomorrow or something? Maybe we can go out. He's like, all right, no, fine. I understand. And he hangs up kind of disgruntled, and he's like her grandmother won't still be dead tomorrow. Frasier and Lilith are still at their end of the bar, and he's like, might understand that you're free tonight. And he's like, yeah, you got something for me? And Frasier's like, well, I got something really cute. And Sam's like, okay, yeah. He's like, young. He's like, Sam, I like him young. Okay, that's good. We'll leave that there for a minute. And Frasier's like, about 32 inches. And Sam's like, usually I like him a little bustier than that. Frasier asks, would Sam be willing to babysit for Frederick? And I'm a little bit surprised by Sam's reaction. I don't think he would say no, but I'm surprised at how quickly he says yes. Like in that moment, he's like, oh yeah, I love that little guy. I'd be happy to. I would think Sam at least would be like, okay, you know what? I don't have anything else going on. You know, girl broke our date, so I'm pretty sure you need help. I'll do you a favor. That's no problem. I think he would do it because he's a stand-up guy. But in that moment, he really sounds like, oh yeah, I would love to. That'd be great. Like, I almost as if he would prefer that to what other option he had.
Which I think also for a character of Sam's age, which I think at this point must be 43-ish, or, you know, early 40s, I think at this point, it's probably snuck up on him, the desire for fatherhood, and he's not consciously aware of it, is what I think. It could be an explanation for the quickness with which he responds to this opportunity, because you're right. It's something that we haven't actually seen. Like, the interaction with Freddie is going to kind of start now and build into the next episode. So I do think that it isn't something that you would, it's not being set up yet, but for me, thinking about parenthood and decision to parent, I do see that he's actually there and just doesn't know it yet. He's ready for that next stage.
Yeah, this one definitely serves as a kind of prequel to the plot of the next episode, which becomes a driving force for the first half of season 10.
Yeah.
But Lilith is quick to kind of pull Frasier aside. She's like, can we talk in private for a second? She's like, you're making this arrangement without me. And she's like, I'm not sure how comfortable I am with this. He's just a baby. He needs supervision. And Frasier's like, Sam can supervise. She's like, I'm talking about Sam. She's like, you know how out of control he can get, what a mess he can make of everything. And Frasier's like, Sam can clear the mess. Oh, wait, you're talking about Sam still.
this moment in the show is the start of a bunch of cross-purpose discussions between characters where someone is saying one thing and the other person thinks they mean something else. Mm-hmm. And that becomes like a theme, you know, through the whole show. And I've never analyzed Cheers episodes the way I've looked at this one for this podcast, watching it more than once and thinking about, you know, each joke and how it works. So I'm not sure if it's like a Three's Company thing where, oh, there's a misunderstanding with, you know, Jack and the girls. I'm not sure if every Cheers episode has these moments, but in this, there's several instances where someone is talking about something and the other person thinks they're talking about something else, except for Carla, who uses the exact same speech for everything. So that's Carla again subverting what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. But I have to talk about the sweaters. that sweater on Sam, on A Man So Handsome, is an outright desecration. Like, I do not remember I was in university when this was, or I was in law school when this was on. I think it was like a sweatshirt age, right? So I'm not remembering what older men were wearing, but the sweater that Fraser is wearing, I had to actually show my husband because I was like, I don't understand what's going on, but I think it's a paint tube up his left side that then explodes into red paint, and the red paint goes around the back of his collar and then forms the trim on the other side of his cardigan. It is the weirdest sweater, one of the weirdest sweaters I've ever seen. It's so funny.
And he's worn some weird ones already on this on the show.
Yeah.
Lilith concedes. She's like, okay, Sam, but if anything goes wrong, he could be scarred for life, you know. Or she's like, mean Sam, right? And she's like, yes, and it's a threat.
I love Lilith. Yeah. I love everything that comes out of Lilith's mouth. I think she's one of the brilliant characters on the show.
And she's got a great moment right after that because they're like, where are you guys going anyway? Why do you need a sitter? And they're like, oh, Lilith's being honored by her colleagues, her fellow scientists in the community for her work, her study in sensory deprivation. And she's like, yeah, it was fortuitous. She's like, I'd returned to the lab after a 2-week vacation to realize that she had locked her lab assistant in the isolation tank. Needless to say, what could have been an ugly lawsuit turned into an award-winning paper.
But like Lilith to see the silver lining on that.
Yeah. And then, yeah, here's when Carla gets their repetition thing because Sam asks her for any babysitting advice. She's like, yeah, it's really easy dealing with kids. Just remember, you're the boss. Don't let them give you any lip. And if they start acting crabby, stick a bottle in their mouth. And Sam's like, all right, I got it. Then Kelly walks up to Carla, ready to begin her shift. She's like, okay, here's the advice for working with customers. Remember, you're the boss. Don't let them give you any lip. And if they start acting crabby, just stick a bottle in their mouth. It's the same thing. And then just to punctuate that, we get a brief little moment with Phil, the older character, who's actually played by Rhea Perlman's father in real life. He says that he ordered a beer, and she just grabs one, walks over to him, like sticks it, jams it in his mouth. He's like, gonna break his teeth. I'm just so afraid when I see her do that.
I know. Only the comfort they could have is relations around each other, because she does really shove that bottle in his mouth. Yeah.
We cut to Fraser and Lilith's apartment. Of course, this is a new part of the apartment that we've never seen, and I don't think we ever see again. But we get a new set, which is Freddy's playroom or bedroom, kind of unclear, but it's definitely like his kind of room. And Sam is on the floor playing with them, and they're like playing basketball or something. And Sam is calling his shots like he's an announcer at the courtside. It's really kind of adorable. He's a freshman out of the daycare learning center or something like that. Like Freddie's kind of like dunking on it, and then Freddie like picks up a remote control and brings it to Sam. He's like, "Oh, you want to watch some cartoons?" I'm like, that's a good idea. Sam's a little winded. Sam, you're just sitting there on the floor.
It's a very chaotic nursery. I think they took every item they could find on the NBC studio lot that had ever been in a nursery and just threw it all into this one room together, because there's no theme for a couple that's had, you know, several episodes involving repainting or redecorating or whatever, and are, you know, living this sort of traditional 80s yuppies lifestyle. The nursery is also not really built to scale, so it has this odd chaotic Alice in Wonderland vibe to it, because I think they had to lower maybe the door handles for the little actor. The baseboards are really high, the windows are really low, the bathtub's really low, like, so when you watch it, it feels very chaotic and almost surreal. And so then it actually kind of makes sense of what's going to happen to Sam. But I have to say, like, I think that the vibe with Sam on the floor and then the little actor it's so charming and really endearing. And another reason why I really enjoy this episode.
And the child actor who plays Frederick Crane, because of rules, they had to get twins to play him because they couldn't work out the number of hours. So he was played by Chris Graves and Kevin Graves, or the actors who played Frederick Crane.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm trying to work out the continuity. Like, when did Frasier and Lilith decide that the nursery wouldn't be all black and white? Like,
right, like the mobile.
Shapes, like, yes. Like the mobile. Like,
yeah, the mobile, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Sam is watching the cartoon. It's the Flintstones or something. He's really excited about that. And Freddie just kind of walks away. And as Sam notices him, Freddie closes the door. And Sam's like, oh, hey, Freddie, come on. And Sam goes to the door. He's trying to get it open, but it's Freddie's got it locked, and he's calling to Freddie, unlock the door, and then almost begging him, come on, unlock the door, buddy, unlock the door. And you can hear Sam getting more and more anxious. He's like, see the little knob? Turn the little knob. And you just hear a toilet flush on the other side. He's like, wrong knob, Freddie.
I think Ted Danson breaks there, too. I think when he turns away from the door, like, oh, man, what am I going to do now? And he starts half laughing, and it's very charming. I also love all the, like, the fact that he doesn't know how to work the converter, and the you know, the 2-year-old does. The fact that he says, oh, I love this episode of the Flintstones. I don't think I've seen it all the way to the end. Three of the cartoons and everything.
He's got a perfect moment here where he's like, okay, I'm gonna look for a key, and he starts to walk across the room, and he just kind of like stops as the TV, something on the TV catches his eye, and he stops and just gives him it and starts chuckling about it, and then goes back. It's like, you're desperately trying to save this kid, but he's like, hey, well, oh, that was a good moment between Barney and Fred or something.
I love that moment.
He'll use a credit card to kind of jimmy the lock. And I was like, I don't think that works with these kind of locks, but maybe go for it. And he opens up his wallet. He's like, I don't have a credit card. He's like, well, I've got a 20. And it's like, Sam, you think that's going to work? And he starts to slide the 20 between the, and it just gets pulled in there. He's like, no, Freddie, don't give me the 20, but give me the money back. And then you just hear the toilet flush again. It's like, Sam's like, all right, I know what I'm going to do. And he's going to go around to the other side of the, he must know that there's a window to that bathroom. Kind of odd placement because it's right above the tub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he climbs out onto the window, and the window slams shut, leaving him on the ledge. And he's kind of stuck. He's like, all right, I'm in trouble here, but makes his way sliding across. And we go inside the bathroom, and like Freddie, like, all, I think the only mess we've seen is like he's like knocked down, probably rolled all the toilet paper off the roll in like a clump on the floor.
Which I hadn't noticed until I watched this like second or third time. I saw the toilet paper on the floor and I just started to laugh. And the actors are amazing because he's walking around, he's touching the toothbrushes, and it's just like, I mean, he's obviously too young to be directed. I mean, if he's two, we're lucky. He's very little. But it's very funny.
And Sam gets to the other window, but it obviously it won't open. He's like, oh, yeah, burglar-proof locks. Your parents mentioned that. But he's still trying to get it open. He's like, damn, damn, damn. And he kind of looks at it. It's like, you didn't hear that, Freddie. And he's asking Freddie to open the window, which would mean Freddie would have to crawl into the bathtub and then lift it up and everything. It's like, it's not going to happen. And he's like, can I open, do you know the word open? And Freddie walks over to the door, opens and walks back out into his playroom. So back at Cheers, Kelly is collecting glasses from a table, and she goes up to Carla. She's like, the man at the table left too much money. Should we go track him down? And Carla explains, no, Kelly, that's called a tip. And that is a monetary reward for the head waitress. So Kelly's like, oh, okay. So she gives the money to Carla. And she's like, I feel so silly for not knowing that. She's like, no, you're new, you're young. There's no reason you should know that. It's no big deal. So,
Carla's terrible. Yeah.
And then Norm calls to Kelly, is like, can I get a refill? And she's like, yeah, hang on, let me get Woody. He's like, you don't need Woody. You can pour the beer. He basically shows her how to pour the beer by just reaching over, turning the knob. He's like, it's as easy as that. And he's like, now, you see my tab under the register? She's like, this big black book with all the marks in it? He's like, that's the one. She puts it in. He's like, now, Kelly, every one of these marks in this book represents a beer that I have ordered and paid for already in advance. And you can see him thinking about it as he's describing it. It's like, so each time I have a beer, you have to erase one of these marks. And he's like, and make sure you do a thorough job of erasing, because I don't want a free beer, you know?
We've seen the binder for Norm's bar tab before, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole binder, you know, just for him. And again, yeah, the energy of, you're right, like the wheels going, like, how much can I get away with here? And, oh, there's even more he can do, which he does next.
Mm-hmm. And she's erasing that, walking away. Cliff is like, that is genius. He's like, I am really impressed. You know, I'm in the presence of a genius or something. And Norm's like, you know what? Hey, Kelly, how about a beer for my friend Cliff here? And what the heck? Take it off my tab. So put it on my tab. Take it off my tab.
You see where this is going.
Exactly. Back at the cranes, Sam is still on the window ledge outside. It's starting to rain. We see lightning flashing.
Yeah. The lightning and the thunder go off. The little actor's face just goes, whoa. Yeah.
And Sam is like, all right, he's desperate. He's like, I'm going to have to break the window. And he punches it. He's like, and every bone in my hand. And he's like, I'm going to try and jump to the nearest tree and climb down. But you just see him losing his balance. And he falls and you just hear the crashes. And you actually just see little Freddy at the window just say, bye-bye.
<He's> like, exactly.
Back at Cheers, Kelly comes up to Carla, like, I think she gives her another one of her tips and says that she's got some questions for her paper. Carla's like, all right, hit me. She's like, how has waitressing enriched your life? Carla says, varicose veins, stomach acid, back pain, and a hatred for all mankind. And Kelly just smiling. She's like, yeah. And what are the negatives, would you say? And Carla's like, just do the dishes. And Kelly's, oh yeah, I hate doing that too. I hate that one too. Yeah. And she said, we have an Australian couple that does them at our house. That's when Kelly gives her another one of those tips. And Carla's like, that girl is dumber than cotton.
Oh yeah.
Which is an interesting phrase to hear from Carla until Woody exactly. walks by and goes, hey Carla. And she's like, hey Cotton.
Carla, again, just using the same thing for everybody. And yeah, that whole sort of the Oshkosh persona that he has that she's always sending up. It's so funny how quickly she's just treating Kelly exactly like she would treat Woody.
Right. Norm is now at a table with Cliff and Pete, one of the other guys, and he's ordering another pitcher for the table and insists on it. They're like, let us pay for it. He's like, no. He's like, no, don't worry. I got it. Kelly, take this all off my tab. And she's like, Mr. Peterson, my hand is getting tired from all the erasing. And he's like, hey, you wanted a job. It takes work. You can't go and get everything for free. He's like, what about these guys? How about another round for the table of construction workers too?
It's so funny because like I noticed that group like right away because they just look far too ripped to be patrons here. Like they just jump out at you. Like these are like big, burly, strong construction worker types, which again is like a really funny setup because he's, as you know, I forgot to mention, but what's coming up is one of my other favorite reasons for this episode.
Yeah, the three guys at the table of construction workers are played by Gary Lee Davis, Norm Compton, and Steve Hoolan. All of them are stunt performers, which you can put a pin in that because that will be relevant in a few minutes. Norm is like ordering a because the construction worker's like, Norm, we got to go back to work soon. He's like, wow, you're only on the second floor. It's fine. He orders them another pitcher of beers. And then we get Henri coming back, and I made a point of that, and maybe I was getting some parts confused because on the last episode that he was in, which was only the second time we saw him, this is only his third appearance, I commented on, in my mind, he looms as such a larger presence, and part of it might be, and I didn't realize that, because they repeat a joke here when he comes in. In the previous episode that we saw him, the guys made a big deal. They're like, oh, it's that Henri. It's that sleazy French guy who's always trying to steal Woody's girlfriend. I hate that guy. And Henri at the other bar is like, hello, fellas. And he kind of waves and they're like, hey, Henri, how you doing? And I was like, I think that joke made me feel like he had been there longer than he had.
Yeah.
But then they get the same joke in this one. Because they're at the table and they're like, isn't that Henri? And it's like, oh, yeah. Cliff calls him Pepe Le Pew. Yeah. And they're like, I can't believe he would show his face in here. And he's like, hello, fellas. And at the tip, they're like, hey, Henri. And they're smiling again. And then when they stop, Norm's like, and he's such a phony.
For all at his mercy, he's his charm or his interest, the way people are interested in him is almost indomitable at this point. And actually what makes it so funny with Woody is
Woody does not stand a chance because Kelly is incapable of seeing or recognizing anything that Henri is doing. It's actually, I think, Woody's worst nightmare. Like, there is nothing, he will never be able to get her to see what Henri is really doing. And everyone really, really does not even just tolerate him, but are like very interested in him and very attracted to this, which when I was in high school watching this show, you know, live, it was, you know, that typical Parisian man aura, like just the accent alone and the humor of how, you know, vulnerable or powerful, you know, people, that moment can be for people. And I love the part that's coming up where this to Woody. So go ahead, Ryan.
Because he's like, Woody, loan me $10 until payday. And Woody's like, when's payday? He's like, how would I know? You're the one who's working. Kelly comes up to Henri and she's like, oh, hey, Henri. And he sees her like waitressing and what did he say? He's like, serve me a drink so I can pinch your bottom when you walk away or something like that. And she just thinks he's cute and funny. Like you said, and Woody is just sitting there like fuming. You can't say things like that. It's rude. And he's like, but I am the customer and the customer is always right. And he's like, damn, he got me on a technicality. It's so obvious that he's an asshole, but they just feel powerless against him. And it's And it's just because like Kelly wouldn't allow it. And it's right because she's blinded by her just assumption that everybody is great. And there's no reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carla is over at the other table. She mentioned that she's excited that with Kelly working there, she can finally take a vacation. She said the last time she took one was 3 years ago when she went to Graceland. And where are you going to go this time? Graceland. Home of Elvis. Henri orders a soda. He says that stealing Kelly is thirsty work. And what he says, you know, in America, people like saying they're going to steal other people's girlfriends. And he kind of tries to chastise him. And what he says, I'm sorry, as we say in France, and he, you know, presents something in French, gives a little line. Was like, what does that mean? He goes, I'm going to steal your girlfriend, as he says, with a big smile. And darts down the hallway as Woody leaps over the bar and begins to chase him, but he runs right smack into a guy coming out down the hallway, like from the bathroom, knocks that guy's beer over. That guy gets angry, pushes Woody into the table of the construction workers. Their beers fall over. They start pushing him back. And before we get what IMDb pointed out was the first actual bar fight in the show.
Was wondering, I was racking my brain. I remember the wrestling scene between Norm and Moonglow.
Right,
I was thinking about there were one-offs, like one-on-ones where people might got slapped or hit. But not only is this a bar fight, but this isn't, for me, I'm not really, like I said earlier, like I don't watch like a lot of action movies, but this was an impressive bar fight to me. I mean, if Woody Harrelson's body is the one that actually hits that table, and I wasn't positive it was still him, from the back of his hair, it looked a little bit more brown than blonde. But if it was him, like, they're really hurling each other. So I thought it was interesting when you pointed out that these are stunt men, because, and in fact, the one in the jean jacket and the white t-shirt, when he's on the ground and it's dissolving to the back to the nursery, I swear he's just laughing. he's not even broken. He's just not even, he's just like such a blast.
It's funny, like as the scene is kind of erupting, you see just in the corner of the screen, Cliff, Norm, and Pete just get the heck out of there. They just like melt over to the side of the wall. They're like, we're not part of this. As you just see bodies of Woody surrounded by four or five guys, just all toppling around, falling on each other, like popcorn or nuts and like beer just flying everywhere. And it's like, yeah, for being very contained and very short, it's a good looking fight scene. Like it's just a mess of like chaos and like arms and legs just going everywhere. So back at in Freddy's playroom, Sam gets back there looking disheveled, out of breath. He's like, lucky the glass recycling bin broke my fall. He's like, I can tell you, somebody in this building sure drinks a lot of wine. I love that part. Just a funny detail.
Also of Frasier, the show, right? With the sharing tales and everything. Like, that's just such a perfect setup for the arc of Frasier's life.
Mm-hmm. So he says, I was like, let's watch some cartoons because he's tired. And Freddy goes back in the bathroom and locks it. And we get Sam's like, come on, what are you doing to me? And he starts to freak out again. And he's like, what can you do? Well, he can't come up with another better idea. So he's going to go back out on the window. But... He remembers to like put a little toy dog with like a string for its tail and lodges it between the window and the sill so he won't get locked out. But while he's out there, Freddy comes out of the back into the nursery, looks around, sees the dog in the window, and just yanks on the tail and it slams shut, trapping Sam out there.
That is a vintage 1970s toy. I think it's called Digger the Dog. I'm pretty sure I had that when I was a little kid. And when the child actor pulls it out, and you know, I know it's not foam. It's a combination of wood and plastic, I think. Mm-hmm. He pulls the toy out. He doesn't hit himself with it. I was like so relieved as a mom because I was like, you know, that could have gone very wrong. Pulls it out. It volleys through the air, does not hit his little body, and then he just takes it with him back into the bathroom.
Back at Cheers, Woody is nursing like a bloody nose or something like that, black eyed. Like, and Rebecca tells him, she's like, look, Woody, I don't think things are working out with Kelly. And Woody's like, that's my fault. I'm afraid of commitment. And she's like, no, Kelly's a distraction. Your work has suffered. And she causes a bar fight. I have to let her go. And Woody's like, I understand it's a tough decision. She's like, well, yeah, but managers have to make tough decisions. So go tell your girlfriend she's fired. And she's like, oh, I'm getting better at making those tough decisions. I deserve a facial. And as Rebecca is walking away, Carla sticks up for Kelly. She's like, wait a minute, are you going to fire Kelly? Because I want you to know she's the best thing that's ever happened to this bar. And she's like, what are you talking about? And Norm comes out. He's like, wait, something's happening to Kelly? She's not being fired. She's not being let go, is she? And Rebecca's like, where is this loyalty coming from? I've been here for 5 years and you don't care.
Moment where they start to circle each other with suspicion, Norm and Carla.
This moment when Rebecca leaves and Carla's just like, well, by the way, Norm, why did you want her to stay? None of your business. Why did you want her to stay? None of your business. And they just lock eyes dead as they kind of walk a circle around each other as they're like changing gears. Yeah. Switching positions, but never breaking eye contact as they're just holding on to each other. Just the suspicions.
As someone that loves Frasier almost as much as Cheers, there's this episode where the brothers think that the other is interested in the woman that they're trying to go out with. Mm-hmm. And Frasier and Niles both circle each other almost the exact same way, same blocking, et cetera. And it really reminds me of that moment as well. It's so funny.
That's good. There's something very like High Noon Western about it. It's just So Woody tells, you know, is trying to let Kelly go. And he's like, you don't really want to work. He's trying to like make it sound like it's her idea, make her let her down. So she's like, you don't really want to work here, do you? And she's like, I love this place. It's keen. I don't think I've ever heard that word used other than like saying peachy keen. Like that's like the only other phrase I've ever heard with that word. But
yeah,
like I know the word, I know what it means, but I cannot think I've ever heard somebody say it.
I feel like it is used one other time at some point in the 11 years of Cheers, but I don't remember when it was. Mm. I know that odd things like beans, like, you know, so she has these words. So maybe it's her, but it's that whole scene with Woody and Kelly, because they're both so innocent, they are completely reactive and they're about to go to indignant. Else could go and then bring it back, right?
right. Because Woody is trying to sell her on the idea that there's a dark underside of Cheers that you don't always see. It's like people don't really respect you, and everybody's looking out for themselves, and they make you do their dirty work. They don't even. And as he's trying to convince Kelly, he's convincing himself. He's being sucked into his own indignation, as you said. He's like getting himself amped up. He's like they don't have to have the dignity to tell you to your face. They'll make some poor farm boy fire you. And he's like, well, I'm not gonna do it. He's like, I quit, Miss Howe. And he storms off. And Kelly's like, I quit too. Bye, everybody.
That was the Loretta moment, right? She goes, hi, gang, it's here. Energy to it, right? She has to stop herself and still be polite.
Yes. Good catch. Yeah, that's definitely a good Loretta moment. And then Rebecca is, you know, putting on her jacket. And as she's doing so, she knocks more glasses off on the bar and everything. She's like, be careful when you're walking back here. She's just walking. And as she's going to the door, Woody kind of comes in, virtual hat in hand. And he's like, I've had a lot of time to think about what happened after I quit. And I've done some growing up. And he's like, if you'll have me back. And he's already like negotiating against himself. He's like, I know I'll have to start at beginner wages. I'll lose my seniority. She's like, what do you just shut up and get to work? You're like, they're not very nice to new employees.
Right back in indignation again.
And then we get a brief little denouement. Frasier and Lilith come home. Freddie's passed out under a blanket or something on the floor. And they're like, do my eyes deceive? Our little man is asleep. They're like, where's Sam? And he's just kind of a rustling in the branches outside. And he's hanging onto the tree. And he's like, I'm out here, but I can still see the kid. And then he loses his grip and he falls and cuts to black. So
I think that's Sam's jacket on top of Freddie. I feel like there was like a sports emblem on the back. I could be wrong.
I looked at it. I was like, is it like, I kind of thought it was like a New England Patriots thing, but their logo was different in 91 than it is today. So I was like, it couldn't be that. I think you might be right. That maybe that was Sam's jacket. That would make more sense.
I mean, this will lead to when we talk about MVP, but they must have exceeded child labor laws that day on set because like there's no child under set. The actor, you don't see his head.
That's why they have the twins so that they can alternate.
It's just this big lump of leather or
It's a funny episode. We get Sam doing goofy stuff with a little kid, which is like, because it's something new. It's something we haven't seen in the show before. It's a new element. And that's the thing that I've always remembered about it, introducing this new thing, which will become a major plot going forward. But we also get Woody and Kelly and Henri doing their thing and an action sequence. We get a lot going on in this episode a lot of visual fun stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I enjoy it. I think that it's always nice to see Sam in any kind of domestic environment or atmosphere as a character. I think Ted Danson was very undersung on Cheers, and I never a false move in anything he does. His ability to go from comedy to drama, his ability to show heart, his ability to show hurt. And, you know, I didn't say at the beginning why I love the first 5 years so much, but there are moments where Ted Danson is bringing dramatic chops to the part of Sam. And this is that are very elevated. And this new arc of thinking about fatherhood will culminate next season in an incredibly, I think, almost heartbreaking scene where he imagines himself in the future playing a sport with a child of what he hopes will be his son. And then it takes it through the end of the series where he's going to be dealing with, you know, his sexual addiction and other things. And I think this is just a great showcase for Ted Danson to have physical comedy and to show heart at the same time. And I really, really like the episode also for its ensemble nature. Like I said, it's a little bit of everything that I love about the show.
For Norm's tab, hey folks, a quick insert because I actually tripped over my own math this time. I'm giving Norm 6 beers that we can directly witness or infer he consumed for himself. That brings Norm's total up to 934. As for Norm's line of credit that I've started tabulating, he came into this episode with 387 beers remaining on his credit. The first two beers we see him drink this episode are before Kelly starts erasing his tab, so those deduct from his credit, bringing it down to 385 remaining. However, I am going to add 19 beers, including ones he ordered for himself, one for Cliff at the bar, two rounds for him, Cliff, and Pete at the table, and two pitchers for the tables of construction workers. So, add the 19 to the 385, and he now has a credit line of 404 beers, more than he originally negotiated for painting the office. My employee of the week is Kelly. She ended up being my employee of the week, but my runner-up was Norm and Carla, and they were just so close because their roles are paralleled in such a way. Like, they kind of have almost the same part in the episode, culminating in the beautiful visual of them mirroring each other. Like, oh, you know, figuratively and literally. So I was like, that was, they were my perfect runners up. But Kelly would be my employee of the week.
I would have picked Kelly, but for the fact that I'd love to be the only person to pick a child as the MVP in your podcast. And so I'm going to pick Frederick, the actor's nice. Frederick, Freddie, because I do think that relative to his age, which I think is like a 1.8 years, the actors are giving so much and are things that I think is very impressive in that scenario. There's only one time where one of the two boys looks at the audience. It's when he first comes out of the bathroom and the audience reacts and he looks at them. You know, that moment where a child first feels applause on stage in a play, it's like one of those moments. But other than that, he was doing everything he was supposed to do. And for his age, I just was really impressed by that. So I'm going to pick him as my MVP for the week.
Nice. What was your home run or your favorite part?
You guys have lobster every day for lunch. That to me is just one of the top moments in the series for me. I mean, it just encapsulates so much about both Kelly, you know, and Woody as characters. I will say though, there's a close second. Part of it comes from my love of Kelsey Grammer's comedic talent, which I think is huge. And there are things that Kelsey Grammer can do as a comedian that nobody else can do. And you'll see that. But at the beginning, in the teaser, he doesn't even take the time, the minute he says before the incident, when he says those words, Frasier doesn't even take time to like hang the receiver up. He has his hand ready from dialing the rotary. Yeah. Just
connects and puts the
ball as fast as he humanly can. And Kelsey's body language, the way he's turned towards it, the way he uses his hand, the speed with which he does it, and the expression on his face, the audience really laughs at that moment. And it's one of those examples for me of how Grammer just brings choices to certain moments and so much more funny than I think most other comedians could do.
I think the whole incident, that gag in the teaser is probably my home run. I just thought that was wonderful because that's just something that we would always like mention or something. Yeah, we did that before the incident or something. Carla's advice for dealing with both children and customers. And then when Kelly says, okay, Mr. Peterson, but my hands are getting tired from all the erasing.
Oh, and then they also, you hear me talk about water a lot too, but you don't see me drinking it. That was enough.
Oh, Natalie, thank you very much for being on this episode. Where else can our listeners find you if they want to hear more from you or read from you?
Well, like I said, I'm kind of an analog gal. So my books, my physical books, are available at most libraries and in independent bookstores near you, and also are available on Audible on audiobook. And one small overlap, the narrator of my first book played the future Dwarf King in The Hobbit, Thorin Oakenshield, an actor by the name of Richard Armitage. And my most recent book was narrated on audio by Rupert Graves, who is a British actor who played Inspector Lestrade in the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes series. So I've had some very cool TV and film people narrate my books. And that is where you can hear what I've written if you are interested in more of an audio experience. And
I'm
my
familiar
website
with
is
both those actors. That's awesome. Those are good gets. Nice.
AtleeJenner.com. Oh, Emma, I'm pretty active on Instagram. That's my favorite social media right now.
Very cool. Well, thank you again. It was great to have you. And thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of PowerPack. Go to patreon.com/FW podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Kelly, can I have a beer, please?
Okay, let me go get Woody.
Oh, no, you don't need Woody. Come here, let me show you how it's done. Take a glass, stick it underneath this black lever here. Okay? Voila, you have a beer. Now, there's a black book underneath the cash register that says Norm's Tab on it.
You mean this one here with all these little marks?
Right. Now, Kelly, each one of these little marks represents a beer that I've purchased in advance. Every time I order one, you have to take this eraser and erase one of those little marks. Don't forget to erase now. I don't want any free beers.
Okay, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Unbelievable. I'm in the presence of sheer genius. Thank you, Clippy. Kelly, can I have another beer for my dear friend Clifford Clavin? And what the heck? Take it off my tab.